Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters in today for Ben Kiefer. Lawmakers adjourned for the 2018 legislative session on Saturday. This was after passing a tax bill worth $2.8 billion, also passing the strictest ban on abortion anywhere in the country in the early morning hours last week. This session, we also saw legislation aimed to improve access to mental health care, water quality, and the state's medical marijuana program. During this hour, I'm going to be recapping the session with our very own State House correspondent, Joyce Russell, James Lynch of the Cedar Rapids Gazette, and Kay Henderson of Radio Iowa. So lawmakers have adjourned. They're calling this session historic. We want to hear from you. Is it? Do you support the tax cuts, the fetal heartbeat bill? Give us a call, 866-780-9100. Or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also email us or find us on Facebook. I want to go to each of the people that we have in the studio who have been spending a lot of time paying attention to this legislative session and just kind of ask, what is the main takeaway that you bring from this legislative session? Joyce, we'll start with you. What are you taking away from the 2018 legislative session now that they've adjourned?
Well, good afternoon. Thanks, Clay. I think that it's a sort of an undiluted triumph for the conservative agenda, especially if you take the two-year General Assembly, which is what, you know, Republicans will have to campaign on when they go home ahead of the primaries and then for the general election. When you look at the passage last year of collective bargaining legislation, gun rights legislation, voter ID, and then this year, as you just mentioned, the strictest abortion law in the country, the biggest tax cut in Iowa history, I think that they must be feeling very confident to go out and campaign now.
James Lynch, the Cedar Rapids Gazette, what do you make of it?
Well, I think Joyce is right. It was an undiluted victory for the conservative agenda. What strikes me or has struck me about this is last year was the kick the door in session where they stripped collective bargaining rights. They changed workers' comp and did several of those major issues that have been on conservatives' agenda for a number of years. And this year, it was the tax cuts, curtailing abortion rights, things that are sort of a more traditional, I guess would say, Republican agenda items. So it's sort of overall, it was a campaign victory for Republicans, but it's sort of a two-pronged or two-part effort.
Kay Henderson, Radio Iowa, what do you make of it?
Well, I agree with what has been said by my colleagues. What I would add is that I was struck by the word generational that was used to describe this once-in-a-generation agenda that the GOP has enacted. And I recall walking into the Iowa Senate last year with a Republican senator who said to me, we've got to do everything because we may never have a Republican majority like this ever again. They had votes to spare, so people could, in other words, peel off. They didn't need every Republican to vote for everything they did. But in the end, they almost had every Republican vote for everything they did, save for the last agenda item that passed in the wee morning hours in the Senate, in the late night hours in the House last week, the ban on nearly every abortion. There were some House Republicans who could not go that far.
There was an appetite early on in this legislative session for tax cuts. We've been talking about, you know, we've been looking to see what's going to happen. And then on Saturday, finally, we saw what it looked like. Let's break this down. What does it amount to? And Kay, we'll stick with you. The tax cut package, what's in it?
Interestingly enough, it has sort of the speed bump measures or triggers that will prevent some of these cuts from taking place in future years if the state's economy hits the skids and state tax revenue doesn't grow by at least 4% annually. But right off the bat, this will cut income taxes and If you are a fan of Spotify or you're watching all that stuff on Netflix, if you decide that you might want to take an Uber, you will be paying sales tax on what Republicans refer to as the digital economy. They described it as fairness to Main Street. Something Democrats previously, former Democratic Governor Tom Vilsack had argued Main Street was at a disadvantage because of what's happening on the digital front, and we need to collect sales taxes on that. In the closing hours of the legislative session, Democrats decided that they did not think taxing digital services was a good idea.
Joyce Russell, was there anything surprising in this tax cut package that you just weren't expecting to see?
Well, I don't think anyone disagrees that the federal deductibility in our tax code, and I apologize for the inaccessibility of that term, but it means that we deduct our federal taxes when we pay our state tax bill. And I think that there's wide agreement that puts Iowa at a disadvantage, especially on our corporate taxes, when people look at businesses come to look at the state. And so it was unclear whether or not they were going to be able to achieve that in this bill. It costs a lot of money to, it will cost the state treasury a lot of money to do that. But for corporate tax cuts, federal deductibility will be phased out in a couple of years. And I thought that was really touch and go. I didn't know if they were going to make that happen.
James Lynch, because I know taxes are so exciting to talk about on the radio, what do you have to add here? Was there anything that surprised you?
I'm not sure I would say I was surprised, but I think we were all waiting to see whether or not the final tax bill package would include a tax on credit unions that had been talked about for most of the session and was included in the Senate plan, which was much bolder if you talk to the people who were down in the trenches working out the details on these plans. So I was surprised that there was no inclusion of those credit union taxes, and I expect we'll fight that battle again next year.
Because this is something that, from my understanding, comes up session after session. There's always a hunger to tax credit unions, correct?
Among some people.
Among
bankers,
some people.
For example.
Yeah.
And Clay, I'll mention one surprise in the tax bill when it came out. There's a tax, part of the tax discussion is the hundreds of thousands of dollars in tax credits that have grown over the years. The Democrats will say that's the fastest growing part of the state budget. A lot of this goes to businesses. Some of these are actually checks that the state writes to businesses. And so all they could get to in this tax bill is to once again study the tax credits, and there was some frustration over that. But there was one tax credit that got expanded, and that's something called the School Tuition Organization Tax Credit. This is a very generous tax credit that goes to support private schools. And I've followed the development of this tax credit over the years. And every year that the year that it first got into law was a year when Governor Vilsack was negotiating for higher teacher pay, and the conservatives got this in there initially, this private school tax credit, the school tuition organization tax credit. And then every year since then, it has been expanded at the end of the session by adding it to another bill. And so I shouldn't have been surprised. But this year with the tax bill, once again, $1 million increase in this school tuition organization tax credit. So not only did they not rein in tax credits, they actually expanded at least one.
Iowa was making headlines on Friday and well into the weekend for the so-called fetal heartbeat bill. This bans abortion at 6 weeks pregnancy. Kay Henderson with Radio Iowa, kind of lay out what this legislation, what this law looks like and what's in it.
Well, it has been developed by primarily the Senate first, and then the House had some reluctance among its Republican members to advance this proposal. It bans an abortion when a fetal heartbeat may be detected. And as you mentioned, in most cases of a pregnancy, that occurs around the sixth week. Mm-hmm. Critics say that many women do not know they are yet pregnant at week number 6, and that's why they declare this as almost an outright ban on abortions. House Republicans who were reluctant to vote for this outright ban were encouraged to vote for it in the end by the inclusion of some exclusions, namely if there's a fetal anomaly, if the pregnancy is the result of a rape or incest. There are some rather stringent requirements for, though, if you are the victim of a rape, you must report it within a very narrow window to be eligible for an abortion after the 6th week of pregnancy. And for in cases of incest, you must also reveal it to authorities to be qualify for an abortion after the 6th week of pregnancy. It was quite a striking event to cover the bill signing, which occurred in Governor Reynolds' formal office on the first floor. And outside the door were abortion rights activists who were chanting and singing during the ceremony. You could hear them. And then in the governor's office was just this huge group of Republican legislators who were thrilled by this legislation, who got a chance to cheer and try to drown out the protesters outside the door.
And Joyce Russell, this is something that Republicans are hoping goes to court. They want a lawsuit. Explain this.
Well, yeah, in the debate in both the House and Senate, legislators stood up and said, we're not pretending to do anything. Otherwise, we do want this law to be challenged in court, because we would like to see it get all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court and have the Roe versus Wade decision overturned. And so where everyone is expecting that a lawsuit will happen, an injunction will be filed to prevent it from going into effect, and then a court battle of some kind, whether that's in state court or federal court.
And James Lynch, this was a debate that happened overnight into the morning hours. What was this like to cover? What were you hearing from the sides there?
Well, I think the arguments were exactly what you would expect to hear in an argument on this legislation. It was, when they debate overnight, it does take on sort of a different atmosphere. For one thing, people are tired, and which increases the chances of people saying something that is shouldn't be said on the House floor or the Senate floor, that they maybe let their emotions speak for them. And so I think we, as reporters, we listen and watch for that. But it's always interesting to me that a topic of this gravity, there probably are people paying a little more attention, senators and representatives paying a little more attention, but they've heard all these arguments before. And so they're, doing what they usually do during debates. They're catching up on email from constituents. They're writing their newsletters. They're, having their own conversations. It's not exactly Mr. Smith goes to Washington.
I might add, this is Kay. I was struck by a conversation I had in my life outside the legislature. I know that's hard. I know that's hard to believe. I have a life outside the legislature.
No way.
And a woman expressed absolute surprise that legislators of the Republican variety had done this, as if she had not been listening to the debate that's been going on in the GOP for the past 30 years. And as if she didn't realize during the presidential election, when there was discussion about the importance of nominating people to serve as justices on the U.S. Supreme Court, that this might be involved, overturning Roe versus Wade. So I guess I'm struck by how sometimes people who aren't, knee deep in the politics really don't put two and two together. And even, transporting myself back to last year, if you will, the absolute surprise by people that they would undo collective bargaining rights. I mean, they must not have listened to Terry Branstad harangue unions for the entirety of his political career. and to then express surprise that that might be something that he would very much enjoy signing into law.
You mean the general public is not reading platforms for the different major parties?
Yeah, exactly. Or, I mean, the membership of the Supreme Court was a debate point during the presidential election. Republicans have been telling people this is what they intend to do in regards to abortion policy for election after election, and to express surprise that it actually happened seems a little bit strange to me.
And I would add that as comparing this abortion debate to debates in the past, because this bill would, as Kay was saying, in effect outlaw abortions in Iowa, I think that there was more of a flavor of imagining life with abortions being illegal. I mean, all abortion debates sort of hinge on that or come close to talking about that, but there was more of a sense of that in this debate with predictable feeling on both sides. I mean, abortion opponents would like to return to a time when abortion is illegal, and abortion rights supporters are, of course, horrified by returning to a time when abortion was illegal.
At the outset of the legislative session, during Governor Kim Reynolds' condition of the state speech, she said that the first bill she wanted to sign into law was a water quality bill. And in fact, it was. James Lynch with the Cedar Rapids Gazette, what did this bill do, and what are the effects that Iowans can start seeing with this bill? And that's now a law.
Wow, that seems like so long ago.
Same year.
Yeah, same year, but wow. I don't think it changes things a whole lot from where they were last year. There will be funding directed towards water quality projects and supporting the nutrient reduction system. Opponents said it really falls short, that this is just sort of political cover for the governor and Republicans to be able to say they've done something about water quality. And I mean, it's described as a huge problem, and this is just a little bit of money to address it. There are a few measurements in it to know whether we're making progress on improving water quality. So I think this is something that probably, regardless of who's in control of the legislature next year, there'll be more discussion, and probably a lot more discussion if Democrats are in control of the legislature next year.
Well, in the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy, which is something James brings up, this is something that came out in, I think it was 2013, that the DNR, Iowa State University, as well as the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship put together a list of things that farmers can do to clean up Iowa waterways. And the main criticism has always been just that these aren't regulations, they're suggestions for farmers to put in place, things like planting cover crops and buffer strips. So am I right, Kay Henderson, to be seeing that critics of this legislation are just saying that this is just money that's being put into a problem and there's no accountability? I think I'm kind of echoing what James had to say there.
Well, one of the things we have to remember is Terry Branstad started this conversation of having a very much more expansive approach to solving this problem by using some sales tax money that's already being generated around the state to
education
address
infrastructure,
this. Exactly.
Right?
Isn't that right? Exactly. But the pressure valve was sort of released because the lawsuit that had prompted so much concern among policymakers.
Are we talking about the Des Moines Water Works lawsuit?
Correct. Yeah. No longer exists. So I think it should have been no surprise that what they came up with was not as expansive as they had first talked about, because they're not responding to perhaps in the future a court order.
And the important distinction there is that Kay is making is funding for this. Governor Branstad, that was actually a new funding source. It wasn't a new tax, but it was a substantial funding source. And there's no new funding source in this bill.
James, anything else to add on water quality?
Not really. Like I said, I think we're going to hear more about it next year. It's not going to go. The problem's not going away.
I think the interesting thing about this is what may be most remembered is how Kim Reynolds conducted herself in her very first bill signing ceremony. She thanked people for being there. It was a big moment for her. It was in the formal office that Terry Branstad had been signing bills for quite some time. Mm-hmm. And we saw that she approaches the job in a different way than Terry Branstad did.
I want to talk now, before we come up on this next break, about the bottle bill. This is something that Iowans love discussing. Kay's giving me a thumbs up right now. this is a 5-cent deposit that people can turn in their cans and bottles, and it seems to always be discussed every legislative session that I can remember anyway. Joyce Russell, remind us what the conversation was and what ultimately has happened here.
Ultimately, the same stalemate that there's been in the past maintained this year. The grocery industry and the beverage industry would like to get rid of the bottle deposit law, get rid of the 5-cent deposit on bottles and replace in bottles and cans and replace that with a more expansive recycling program statewide. On the other side, you have people who want to expand the bottle law to include all of the many, or to include things that, especially water bottles, which, you know, that was just not a thing back when the bottle deposit law was passed. And so they would like to see the bill expanded. And there, so far, no middle ground. And this year was no exception.
I think the one thing that may tip the balance here is if they can figure out a way to increase the handling fee and expand the number of independent organizations that recycle these things, that accept the empties, that would be an alternative place to take your cans and bottles rather than taking them to the grocery store. But that system has been declining because they're not making any money doing it. So if they can figure out some way to help more recycling centers pop up around the state, I think that might be a catalyst to getting what the grocers and bottlers want.
Is there any kind of polling out there that shows, do Iowans like this bottle deposit law? Or, I mean, is there much frustration that just this keeps, oh my, the can keeps getting kicked down the road? I'm sorry.
Clay, the polling shows that Iowans love the bottle bill. Even, I think, people who want to change it love it. But the problem, as Kay outlined, is you have, every year we have a stalemate between grocers and the people who want to expand the bottle bill. And, they've tried different approaches, but I don't see them getting any closer together, that the sides they're as far apart as they were 2 years ago and 4 years ago and probably 40 years ago. But this is another one on my list of issues that comes up every year, but nothing is ever solved.
All right, we're going to take a break, go to some news headlines, and when we come back, we'll still be talking about the Iowa legislature, which adjourned over the weekend. We'll be talking about mental health legislation, as well as conversations that took place over medical marijuana. And there was a lot of talk this legislative session about sexual harassment. We'll be back after this break. You're listening to River to River on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Clay Masters.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
This is River to River on Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters in for Ben Kiefer today. And the Iowa legislature adjourned on Saturday. We're talking about what happened with some legislative reporters, including our own State House correspondent Joyce Russell, news director for Radio Iowa Kay Henderson, and reporter at the Cedar Rapids Gazette James Lynch. They're all with us, and we want to go now to some comments from Governor Kim Reynolds. After the legislature adjourned, the governor posted comments about what she saw as achieved this session on Facebook. And she cheered what she calls the achievement of this legislative session.
This 2018 legislative session is one of accomplishments. We passed historic state tax reform that really passed on the savings from the federal tax reform, allowing working class families and small business owners and farmers and workers to keep more of their hard-earned money. We passed an affordable health care plan so that Iowans wouldn't have to make a decision between health care and a mortgage payment. We passed comprehensive mental health care reform, really identifying the gaps and putting into action a plan that can provide vulnerable Iowans the health care that we need. We protected life, and we worked to save lives by passing a new law that addresses the opioid epidemic.
And she went on to talk about water quality and said that lawmakers worked across party lines.
You know what? This legislative session was about Republicans and Democrats coming together to build a solid foundation that put Iowans first.
Kay Henderson with Radio Iowa, do you think that Democrats would agree with the sentiment that the governor just laid out there?
Well, I think Kim Reynolds is not speaking to Democrats. She's speaking to independent voters. That's a message that she's going to want to push in the end of September into October. She's going to stress these bipartisan bills that passed, the opioid epidemic bill and the bill that addresses some of the fissures in the state's mental health system. Those are the things she's going to be stressing. The other things that the legislature did, especially the abortion ban, will be animating to her base, some of whom will not be motivated just by virtue of the state of political affairs in the country. And so having taken action on that may actually benefit her in that it motivates the base of her party to be more enthusiastic about her candidacy than they might otherwise be in a non-presidential year.
I want to move on then. Last night, U.S. House Democratic Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi was in Des Moines to rally support in a preview of the midterm elections. She was a guest of the Polk County Democrats. State Senator Pam Yoakum, a Democrat from Dubuque, also spoke, and she criticized the tax plan lawmakers passed before they adjourned and then mentioned the ongoing controversy in the state regarding the privatization of Medicaid. Here's what she said.
Now, I mentioned a little earlier the whole issue with abortion, but I need to mention one more thing that they have been a complete disaster on, and that is the privatization of Medicaid, an issue that, of course, is very near and dear to me since I do have a child with a disability. But I don't know if you realize that other states are now pointing to us and saying, don't do it like Iowa did it. The Republicans may be pro-birth, but they are not pro-life.
All right, Joyce Russell, talking about Medicaid there, this was something that former Governor Terry Branstad did in 2016. It was something he did not need legislative approval to do, handing over management of Iowa's Medicaid system to three managed care organizations, for-profit companies. What got done this legislative session? This was something that Governor Kim Reynolds early on in her condition of the state speech said there were problems with.
Well, there was a Republican bill to provide some more oversight for the managed care companies and have some independent audits of some of their decisions. It's been clear from following this issue that Republican or Democrat, it doesn't matter which party you're in, you're getting complaints from your constituents. And so I think Republicans and Democrats felt that they had to do something. The bill that they came up with had a price tag on it to pay for these new audits and some other things. It passed the House with, I think it may have been a unanimous vote. It went to the Senate. They balked at the cost. The House revamped it and scaled back these inspections to maybe to reduce the cost by about half. We're talking in the neighborhood of $1 to $3 million. That went back to the Senate and it didn't go anywhere. So it got attached to a budget bill, and so this will become law. But there was once this got to the floor of the Senate for discussion, there was very bitter debate from Democrats who say that there's really no teeth in this, this is on their list of things, of their accomplishments for the session. I saw that on one of the governor's lists of accomplishments for the session, but the Democrats are very skeptical that this is going to really address the problems.
James Lynch, Medicaid affects a large population of the state. If your people aren't on it, likely they know somebody that's on it. Some 600,000 people in the state are on Medicaid. Does this change much for those people who are on Medicaid, the legislation that was signed?
Well, again, it depends on who you ask. The governor and Republicans say that it will make a difference. Democrats don't think so. Throughout the session, we heard a lot of Republican lawmakers talk about bumps in the road and trying to smooth some of those bumps in the road. I think Democrats looked at them more as ruts or gullies or complete washouts in the road for Medicaid. And I think they wanted to do more, as Kay said, but the price tag, there's going to be more money in next year, according to Human Resources Committee members. They'll put in more money, but, you know, that's a promise that they may not be in the position to keep next year.
There was some bipartisan support sticking with health care on mental health legislation. Kay Henderson, Radio Iowa, bring us up to speed. What does that mental health legislation look like, and why was there bipartisan support for it?
The legislators who I talked to said one of the reasons that they acted was that people came and told their personal stories, that they were motivated by family members who were trying their hardest to get care for an adult who just was unable to get the appropriate level of care in Iowa because of the status of the system. You also had the law enforcement community joining in this, because oftentimes the law enforcement community is involved in dealing with someone who's having an acute mental health crisis, and then they have to transport them to a facility. They have to find a facility that would even keep these folks. This was chapter one of a book that is yet to be written, because the governor has signed an executive order creating a new board that will advise legislators next year in how best to reform the system for caring for children with mental health. And it even has bigger gaps in the system than the adult mental health care system in Iowa. So this is an ongoing discussion, but I think if legislators are to point to one bipartisan success of the session, this one would be it.
Joyce Russell, how do you see the ongoing discussion on mental health moving forward in the state?
Well, as Kay just said, I think there's going to be a shift in emphasis now to children. That they've had working groups on that as well. The mental health for adults, the bill that passed, was the work of a very wide-ranging group of stakeholders who worked over the summer, put together what they thought was needed to, as Kay said, fill the gaps in the system. And the bill that they passed was essentially, they took that group's report and put it in a bill and passed it. I think that similar work is now going to happen with the children's system. There will be working groups on that, and I don't know how long that will take. I don't know if they'll be back with something next year or not.
Another healthcare issue that got a fair amount of discussion this legislative session also had to do with medical marijuana. James Lynch, bring us up to speed. What was the conversation? What got passed? And what are advocates of medical marijuana wanting more out of in the next legislative session?
Well, the advocates want more access to medical cannabis or cannabidiol, and they want to be able to use it in the treatment of more conditions. There was some movement in the Senate this year, but in the House, there was really no movement. Speaker Upmeyer, who is a nurse, says she wants to wait until this advisory board that the legislature created last year comes back with its recommendations. I think it's in December. She said that will give the legislature time to act on those recommendations in January and you know, expand this if that's the recommendation. In the meantime, she says people aren't really going to have access to medical marijuana in Iowa beyond what the legislature did last year or 2 years ago. I think the battle lines are pretty much where they are. Public opinion clearly is on the side of expanding access to medical marijuana. So, you know, I look for that to change in the future, but this year there was no movement in the House.
I want to move on now to something that's not legislation so much as it was a discussion that continued to happen throughout this legislative session, and that is sexual harassment. We saw a number of years ago a lawsuit was filed against former Senate Majority Leader Bill Dix, a lawsuit by a former staffer, and it was a settlement was reached. There were a number of things that happened this session, and it started with another time where we're going to be saying, wow, was this really this legislative session? But former Senate President Mary Kramer put out a bunch of recommendations of things to move forward to change the culture at the State House. Kay Henderson, walk us through some of the things that happened from January to where we are now in regards to sexual harassment.
Well, one of the things that this exposed was this sort of ravine that divided the House and the Senate. House Republicans were really disgusted and unhappy with the way that now former Senate Republican leader Bill Dix dealt with this over the course of 5 years. If we can go back, Kirsten Anderson filed her lawsuit this month, May of 2013. She was fired, rather, in May of 2013. So this was 5 years in the making. And last summer, a jury heard the stories, accounts from people who were in the Iowa Senate working and exposed to some egregious behavior by senators and by a staffer who kept his job until he was able to negotiate an exit. Kirsten Anderson, the woman at the center of this, was eventually awarded a $1.75 million settlement. Senator Dix refused at first to tell anyone what conclusions had been reached from the internal review he ordered 4.5 years after she had first complained of the hostile work environment. And then Governor Kim Reynolds and House Speaker Linda Utmeyer said, put it out there. And so then he brought in Mary Kramer, who in her private life had worked in human resources for the state's largest insurance company for years. But this thing kept rearing its head throughout the legislative session because there was this angst about how it had been handled and the fact that this case had gone all the way to court, even though people had advised Senator Dix to settle.
And Joyce, it was Bill Dix resigned because of video that surfaced earlier this session. Remind us here what happened, and did you see things really change after he left?
Well, you're referring to the incident that was captured on camera at a bar in Des Moines, with Senator Dix appearing to lean over and kiss a woman who was identified as a lobbyist. The action there was very swift. The online blogger, The Starting Line, someone had presented them with this video. Just a person at the bar had presented them with this video. He put it up. It was a matter of hours before Senator Dix was history. And on that day, when the new Senate president, the new majority leader is Jack Whitfer, of course, the new Senate president is Charles Snyder, and he promised an immediate review of the issue and of policies in the Senate. The one thing that the Senate did on this, the action that they took, was they did pass a change to their rules to prevent harassment or retaliation between legislators, between senators and lobbyists. And that had raised questions about the possibility of, you know, the senator exerting influence on the lobbyist or the lobbyist exerting influence on the senator. So they at least have that in their rules now.
And James Lynch, another issue that happened kind of late in the session, it wasn't so much lawmakers, but the director of the Iowa Finance Authority, Dave Jamieson, fired for making sexual harassment advances towards various people on his staff. And the governor fired Dave Jamieson. Bring us up to speed here.
Well, I don't think we know the end of the story yet, Clay, but the governor was, her chief of staff was handed a letter on a Friday detailing egregious behavior on the part of Dave Jamieson, the then director of the Iowa Finance Authority. And on Saturday morning, she fired him after meeting with some of her top staff members. This is probably going to be in a textbook somewhere of how not to handle these situations, because after she fired him, she said she wasn't going to release any information about it. And then over the course of the next few weeks, we saw her reverse herself a number of times, saying she wouldn't release it, and she wouldn't call for an investigation. And, of course, then she called for an investigation, and then the complainant said she wanted the information released, and so the governor's office released her letter detailing Jameson's behavior. The state could be sued either by Jameson for wrongful dismissal, even though he was an at-will employee, or by the woman who complained of his behavior. There's also an investigation by the auditor's office looking at the sort of financial aspects of this, and then the governor has ordered an investigation to look at what's why this happened and what was or wasn't done to prevent it from going any further. There's some questions about, kind of the bystanders. What's their responsibility here? Because the woman made clear in her complaint that other people in the department were aware of Jameson's behavior, and it appears they did nothing. They didn't come forward or forward her concerns to anyone inside the department or outside the department.
And Kay Henderson, so we've just run through all these different things. I mean, is there going to be change in the workplace culture at the State House and in state agencies?
One would hope. I've covered the legislature a long time, since the last century, as it were. And, I remember being called in public a dolly. I remember riding in an elevator and having two male lobbyists behind me talk about having sexual relations with a senator, a female senator, envisioning it in my presence and thinking nothing of it among the two of them. So I think the culture is changing, and you have more women in the legislature, and I think that is forcing a change, as is the cultural movement, the Me Too movement, which makes this Dave Jameson episode even more unbelievable, because he seemed to be, in the words of his female colleague, escalating his behavior, which was reprehensible, at a time when everyone throughout the culture is discussing about how one should not engage in this type of behavior.
Joyce Russell, I'll ask you the same question. Do you think the things that have happened are going to create any kind of change in state government?
Well, I'll just echo what Kay said. I certainly hope so. I was a much younger woman when I started covering the legislature. And someone in an elevator, I was alone with a man in the elevator, a legislator in the elevator, and he said, "What's a sweet young thing like you doing here?" So I think probably every woman at the State House has some kind of comment. Mm-hmm. And we can only hope that the publicity that it's gotten will eventually make a difference.
Also want to talk about something that apparently Iowans can never stop talking about, and that is traffic cameras. This thing gets brought up all the time. Are we ever going to see the end of this conversation? What happened in this legislative session around traffic cameras? We've got to make it brief, though.
Nothing happened. Okay. I thought something might happen because in the last week of the legislature, the Iowa Supreme Court issued a ruling and said the DOT can't regulate these things.
Right.
That didn't even prompt these two warring factions, ban them, keep them, and regulate them to resolve their differences.
Any suggestions, any thoughts that you would offer to make this conversation stop happening? Anybody? Open the floor.
Mr. Lynch?
Well, Clay, I think there will be a conversation next year, because really what the court said is that the DOT didn't have the authority, and I think there are some lawmakers who want to either regulate traffic cameras or give the DOT some guidelines on some authority to regulate them.
And then moving forward in the last minute or so that we have in this show today, what are you expecting this legislative session, the repercussions that it's going to have during the election, which the primary is less than a month away now? Kay?
I think because of the work product, Republicans are energized by what they see from their Republican legislators. I think because of the work product, Democrats are energized to go out and campaign against Republican legislators. So I think it just added fuel to the fire.
Joyce?
Well, Senator Janet Peterson said on the last day of the session, I'm hoping for a much bluer Senate next year, and I'm sure they'll be working very hard to try to make that happen.
And James, I'll give you the final word here.
Well, we've seen the energy and enthusiasm among Democrats to make changes. I think the action at the very end on the tax cut and the fetal heartbeat bill energized Republicans, and more importantly, perhaps, it told the family leader and groups like that to go out and get active on Republican campaigns rather than sit on their hands.
All right. Thanks so much to my panel today, to Kay Henderson with Radio Iowa, IPR's Joyce Russell, and the Cedar Rapids Gazette's James Lynch. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Lindsay Moon, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer of talk shows is Catherine Perkins. Thanks to engineering support today from Karina Abbott and John Pemble. I'm Clay Masters. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.